Okay, I'm just waiting for my PowerPoint.
Perfect timing, because then I can record you.
I'm being harassed again. And there we have it. So as John said, my name is Kedron Jones, and I grew up in South Central Los Angeles. One of my favorite American pastimes as a little boy was playing in the dirt with my sister. And this is going to reveal how old I am. I used to love the show Land of the Lost. And so I was in love with Holly when back in the days. But we used to have this huge dirt field at our home. And I remember playing with my younger sister. We would do all kind of things. We would do things like building castles out of mud, getting dirty, slipping in the mud. We'd find things like worms. I used to have a magnifying glass and often would burn and kill ants, oftentimes. Oftentimes, we'd take things and pick them up and show them to our mom. Mom, what is this? What is this? And she would tell us what these things were, and then we'd kind of decide, hey, you can kill it, get rid of it, whatever the case might be. Okay, that's fine. So we did that. That illustration is sort of a big key question to the moral question of abortion. Everyone thinks it's a very complicated issue. Morally speaking, it's actually straightforward. Imagine 10 years from now, for some of you who are in college, that you're washing the dishes. And your 5-year-old comes up to you and says, Mommy, Daddy, can I kill this? What would you say if your 5-year-old said that as your back is turned washing the dishes? What would you guys say? Yeah, what is it, right? If it's a snail or roach, great, don't show mom, go ahead and kill it. If it's the neighbor's kitty, whoa, all right, maybe not. If it's your brother and the sister in the headlock, then that kid needs counseling. And this is the question, what is it, that trumps every other consideration in the abortion debate? Because before we can talk about what we are killing inside the mother's body, we have to answer the question, what is it, before we can do that. Some people will say, well, a woman ought to have a right to privacy. I agree. I think every woman should have a right to privacy. But will we allow anybody to have privacy in their own home if that involved killing their 5-year-old? Some people will say, well, you mean you're going to force a poor woman to bring another child in this world? Well, that depends. If the unborn are human, like a 5-year-old, then it would never justify us killing the unborn. Some people will say, you mean to tell me you're going to force a woman to adopt all these embryos? Well, if the unborn isn't human, then I agree that we should. One great apologist said, quote, if the unborn is not a human being, then no justification for abortion is necessary. However, if the unborn is a human being, then no justification for abortion is adequate. And here's the deal. If what's inside of the woman's body is not a human being, then go at it. It'd be like me clipping my toenails. Probably be kind of disgusting to you guys, but it would be sort of like that. But however, if the unborn are human, then there would never be a justification for ending the life of that child. Some people may say, well, no one knows when life begins, so I think abortion should be legal anyway. Let's imagine this. Let's say, for example, you're a structural engineer. You're about to blow up a building. And you have all the demolition team ready to go, and you're about to, you know, press the button, but your supervisor says, "Hey, is there anyone in there?" And what happens if you were to say, "Well, you know, I'm just not really sure, but I'm just going to blow it up anyway." We would call that neglect, and that person can be potentially prosecuted for that unless we check. And so actually, as we'll see in a moment, the science of embryology tells us that the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. But let's grant for the sake of argument that we're not really sure when life begins. Then I think that we should at least do the benefit of the doubt and not do anything. And here's what I'm talking about. Let's say, for example, you're driving here. You see an old coat on the road, and you're not sure if it's somebody crawling, just kind of drunk, or if it's just kind of a coat that was left in the road. Most of us, if not all of us, would slow down to kind of check. And the whole thing with this is, if we don't know, then we should give the benefit of the doubt in case it is a human being. Some people, which is called the modified pro-life position, you'll see a lot of politicians use this. They say, "I'm personally opposed to abortion, but a woman should have the right to choose." Could you imagine? And this actually went on during the time of Lincoln when slavery was a debate. If somebody said, and some people did say this, "I'm personally opposed to slavery, but if a slave owner should have the right to choose," would that be okay? More than likely not, because if the slave is human, then we shouldn't take a life. This is Naomi Wolf. She's a pro-choice feminist. And what she said one time was, as a pro-choice individual, it's disingenuous when we're dialoguing together with other people and we don't allow a pro-life person to admit the evidence to support their conclusion. This is videos, this is different things like that. And she says what happens is, if we don't allow us to talk and dialogue and admit all the evidence, it shows that as pro-choicers, that not only are we intolerant, but that we're cowardly. So what I'm going to do is this in just a moment. I just want to kind of let you guys know what I'm about to do. I'm going to show you guys a 1-minute video. You're not obligated to watch it. You can either turn your heads, and I'll explain what it is. You can turn your heads. There's no sound. You can close your eyes. But if you are not in high school, so if you're younger than high school age, I want to respectfully ask that you go out not stay in here just for about a minute until somebody can call you back in. But what I'm going to show you guys is the aftermath of an abortion. And I say this simply because when people talk about abortion, you'll find out oftentimes that we talk about secondary issues surrounding abortion. But no one actually talks about abortion. And for many, it becomes this abstract thing and nothing really concrete that people understand what's happening. So I'm going to show you guys a 1-minute clip of the aftermath of an abortion. And again, you're not obligated to watch it. You can turn your head, you can close your eyes or anything like that. And some people may be thinking, well, isn't this emotional? You know, you're appealing to our emotions. Yeah, it could be very emotional, but the question is it the truth? with the clicker, the pointer on the computer, there should be a way for you to go down and just, yeah, and click on the play. There we go. If you click on the, sorry, everyone. If you click on sort of the middle right here, just with the, yeah, there we go. It's going to stay like that for a while, and then it's just going to advance. There we go. Okay. If anyone who is outside, they can come in at this point. Pro-life apologist Greg Cunningham had once said, "A culture can trivialize injustice so long as they never have to look at it." And this is the pro-life position. This is what I'm arguing. It is wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. Premise two, elective abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being. Therefore, elective abortion is wrong. By abortion, I just simply mean the intentional killing of what's inside the mother. And we know, according to the science, because we have to look at the science and the philosophy behind this, the science tells us that the unborn are human. That from the earliest stages of development, the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings, and that every successful abortion ends the life of an innocent human being. How do we know that they're innocent or alive? I'm not going to read this, but if you look at every embryology textbook, embryology is a study of telling us about, it's a field in biology that tells us about things like this, the unborn. It tells us, and this is one of many embryology books, that from conception you have the life of a new human being. It's not a faith matter, because there's atheists who believe this according to science. They're distinct. What do I mean by distinct? At the point of conception, the unborn is genetically distinct. So once the sperm and the egg match, they're completely genetically different than the mom and the dad. They have their own blood type sometimes, and in development, on cases, a different gender. They also meet the criteria for life, which we'll look at too. They're living. Dead things don't grow. So in other words, there's metabolism, and they meet all the criteria for life. They have heartbeats and everything like that over time. And they're whole human beings. One individual said, quote, "Most importantly, the embryo is a complete or whole human organism rather than part of a living entity. All of its cells work together in tandem towards the growth of a single entity, the embryo." Look at what I'm doing to my hands. I'm probably scratching like a bunch of skin cells. But this is really different than what we're talking about here, because the unborn are distinct. By definition, a body part shares the same genetic code as I do. But what's inside the mother is a completely different genetic code from that of her and the father. So like I said, the unborn are distinct, living, and whole human beings. Now, some people may say, well, Kedron, yeah, of course what's in the mother is a human being. No duh. But they're not human persons. And so they'll use usually one of four criteria to show that although what's inside the mother is a human, that they're not valuable. Humans have intrinsic value and are not valuable because of some function they can perform. If humans are valuable simply because of some function, there's going to be difficulty in justifying the value of all people. Because anything somebody uses to devalue the unborn can be also used equally to devalue any of us in this room. So when somebody uses some argument, think of the acronym SLED. It stands for size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency. These are only four differences between the unborn and those who are born. Size. Size doesn't determine value. Most of us as men who are in this room are larger than most of the women. But ladies, does that mean that us as men are more valuable than you?
No.
Size doesn't matter. Yeah, the embryo or the unborn may be smaller than us, but that's not a significant enough difference to kill the unborn. Level of development. Yeah, some of us are, our level of development's a little bit different, you know? Some of us are much more aware than others. If you've had some coffee, you might be more aware. For some of us, we're not so aware. You know, I was up quite a bit last night getting my son chocolate milk at about 1 in the morning. I'm not that much aware than some of you guys at the moment. But just because the unborn are aware, how does that make them not valuable? Environment. Some people say that the unborn are in the mother's womb. But since when does environment equate value? Many of us were in the foyer before we came in here. Is it okay that I kill you now since you're in the foyer and for some reason you're here? In other words, how does the journey of 8 or 9 inches out of the birth canal suddenly make you valuable? Location has no location is not significant. Degree of dependency. Some people will say we can justify abortion because of the unborn is dependent. Well, guess what? Many of you in this room are dependent on certain medication, on a pacemaker. I just found out that I was diabetic, and I may not need medication, but if I ever do, I will be dependent on something beyond me. Historically, people have used these four differences to justify a whole host of things. Same arguments for slavery were done too. So according to the Virginia Supreme Court decision of 1858, it says, in the eyes of the law, the slave is not a person. People knew, yes, slaves are human beings, but they're not persons or people of value. So they justified enslaving them. The same was true with women. Amazingly, in Canada, did you ladies know that women were not considered persons in Canada until the 1920s? They were human beings, but not considered persons. According to the British North America Act of 1867, it says, women are persons of matter and pains and penalties, but are not persons in matters of rights and privileges. So people use the same exact arguments when it came to abortion and slavery are very parallel, if you see, if you ever study this out. The pro-life view is that no human being, regardless of size, level of development, race, gender, or place of residence, should be excluded from the community of human persons. Our view is that humanity is inclusive, wide open to all, especially those who are small, vulnerable, and weak. Anyone know who this is? This kid is named Emmett Till. And in about the 1960s, Emmett Till was from Chicago. But he had cousins down south. His mom put him on a train. Good day, son. And he went to go and visit his cousins for the summer. Now, Chicago is very different than going deep down south in places like Alabama or Mississippi. Now, as an African American, you can't just associate yourselves with Caucasians like you could in other parts of America. So Emmett one day was hanging out with his cousins. He went into a store. There was a female white clerk. And he was telling his cousins, I have a white girlfriend. And his cousins are like, what? Oh my gosh, you know. And then reports, although it's kind of scattered, said that Emmett in the store paid the clerk the money for a piece of candy and said something to the effect of, "Thanks, babe," and then walked out. One gentleman, older gentleman, told him, "Until boy, you better get out of here because now there's going to be trouble." And 2 days later, he was hunted down, killed, and no one saw him again for a very long time. His body was recovered. They shipped him back to Chicago, and it was horrendous. And his mom, the coroner actually told his mom, "Don't do an open casket because he looks so bad." His mom said, "You know what? I'm going to do an open casket because people in America need to know what was done with my boy." And in the same way, men and women, we need to open up the casket on this issue of abortion. We live in a culture that wants to close the casket on so many issues of our day. There are so many people who are ashamed of what they've gone through. And I don't stand here today as somebody who is, the standard of morality. There are some women in this room who may have had an experience of abortion. And you know what? Not only is the unborn a victim, but most women are too when they've had abortions for many reasons. So there's actually two victims oftentimes. And so I don't come as one judging you if you've had an abortion today, but that's where Jesus can come in to you guys and forgive you of anything. Oftentimes women are the very victims because oftentimes they're not really told the truth about abortion. And so I want to leave you guys today that as you guys are listening through all the speakers today, internalize what's being said so that way we can win the war for Christ in defending Christian values, because it's really vital. It's much more important. And for those of you who are college students, and I'll leave it here, it's invaluable for you guys to learn how to defend Christian values, because you are going to defend and you're in a position in life where you're going to have to do it so often. You're going to also need to learn how to teach your future children how to defend not just life, but defend God's will. Thank you.
Not an easy talk to give. Appreciate Kevin. We have about 10 minutes or so for question and answer. We're going to take a break, and then we have a talk at 10:45. So I guess I'll get off the stage, and you guys can hand the mic back and forth based on the question that's asked.
Sure.
Okay. Please speak loudly if you have a question.
All right. I'm going to take one from this side. Go for it. Good question. And so this is actually, just to let you guys know, so the question is basically, what do you do with people who are going through IVF or want to do it? What do you do with the embryos? And just to let you guys know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to cover this. And when it comes to artificial reductive technology or ART, the same question, what is it, applies to everything, whether it's abortion, IVF, even taking oral contraceptives like the pill. It all comes back to that one question. And just kind of a short answer to your question, in terms of IVF, because the moral status of the embryos, because they are human beings genetically, and because they have intrinsic value because they're humans, IVF in and of itself isn't wrong. The moral question of that has to do with, what do you do with the embryos? And so, based off of science, and I believe good reasoning, it seems to me that you can't discard the embryos, because if they are human and whole human beings, then we can't kill them. Most people will do IVF and then discard many of the embryos or give them to science for experimentation. But think about this. I have a 2-year-old daughter. May I kill that my 2-year-old if it means I can have multiple children? What do you think? No, because she's human. And then the same logic applies to the embryos. Now, that's counterintuitive for a lot of people, but if they are human, then there's no justification to kill them. Any other questions? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a question.
I'm sorry, can you stand up?
Uh-huh. And then towards the end, you mentioned about the welfare and the concern for both the child and the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what, I guess, an appropriate position would be when, during the pregnancy, the child coming to full birth is at health endangerment to the mother, and mm-hmm. the doctor recommends for her to have an abortion so that her life can be kept, especially if she has younger children.
Yeah. So, by definition, abortion is the intentional killing of the unborn. And so, in this case, it's actually not... So, for example, if a mother has a tubal pregnancy, right? A doctor or a specialist may say, you know, unfortunately, this baby's going to kill you. And right now, at the moment, we don't have medical technology where we can save both the mother and the unborn. And so, an ethical doctor will do is they'll work to solve what the primary problem is, not so much the baby. But what happens is in working, so for example, I mean, it can be a tubal pregnancy or let's say a uterine cancer or something. They work to solve the medical issue, which may be problems with the tube or the actual cancer and cutting it or whatever they have to do. But in that, the end result is the death of the baby, which is unintended. So in cases like that, so if any of you ladies have had a tubal pregnancy and had to, it's not by definition abortion because the doctors were working and the intention was to save a life instead of intentionally killing a life, if that makes sense. So in philosophy, we'll call it like the principle of double effect, which means that there's kind of this unintended consequence of something good that you're trying to do. Now, maybe in the future, if we're able to save both because we can, it's either one or the other, then they would, in general, you know, do that.
That's
good.
Wrong, you know, but how do we put it on the backdrop? I mean, since Roe versus Wade, there's been like 50 million babies aborted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty, when you really stop and think about it, that's like overwhelming. Okay?
It is.
It's an a huge loss of life. So today we have issues socially, there's a lot of social issues, whether it's racism and so forth like that. I almost say, how do you reconcile on the backdrop? I see that as just a loss of life to
mm-hmm.
me is bigger than racism.
Absolutely.
When I'm seeing a life lost or an injustice, I'm going to say the life lost takes bigger precedence. This is, again, an opinion I'm not saying necessarily right or wrong, but I feel like, biblically speaking, as Christians, how do we handle this? Because on one sense, I see people running over these social issues, and, you know, we have strong feelings about it. But in the backdrop is this killing going on.
Yeah.
And in minority groups, by the way, a lot of them were put in minority groups,
mm-hmm.
many of them purposely.
Yeah.
Whether we want to look at it or not, more racism, more people are being killed there
yeah.
than by police. So I have a hard time. How do you reconcile that? Because to me, that is a bigger issue. So I don't know.
No, it's a good question. And, you know, part of it, in my opinion, and I'd love to hear Dan too, I think part of it is for many people, whether you're Christian or not, the whole issue of abortion is this abstract thing. And so part of the reason why I needed to show you guys the pictures of that video is to make it a concrete thing, exactly what we're talking about. Because I think part of it is people are sort of, lack of better words, ignorant on what's kind of going on because we get so caught up with all the secondary issues. Some people have the wrong info, so what they say is, well, this is just a clump of cells, so who kind of cares? It's, you know, your choice. But no one really studies what is the science, so we don't have to talk about religion or anything. What's just the science and then good philosophy? And so, I mean, think about it. If 3,000 2-year-olds were killed every day, our nation would be up in rage about it. But then if we use all these euphemistic language and make it kind of unclear, then oftentimes, whether you're Christians or not, you kind of get duped and believing that what's, you know, humans being killed on a day-to-day basis in America, approximately 3,000, are just a clump of cells. So.
I think Kedron and I talked about this on the way here about this isn't something that I desire. I don't think any of us desire mm-hmm. this. But I think as society changes and gets farther from God's standards, mm-hmm. we're going to have to be accustomed to being a principled subculture, kind of the way we view the Amish. You know, the Amish, there's some respect given to them as kind of as a principled, you know, very moral subculture, but they're totally out of touch. Don't know if I want that lifestyle. But we're going to look more and more like that as we get more out of step with an ungodly culture. And I think what you're saying, some of these other issues, I mean, there's a dark history with race and abortion. And Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, she saw birth control as a way of getting rid of the undesirables in society that, you know, weren't, you know, white people like her. You know, there was a racial element to that. And so we look at these other racial issues, and those do need to be addressed, but there's this dark eugenics history to abortion. And there's a lot of talk today about social justice, and we usually mean, well, let's feed the poor and do these things. Absolutely, we should be doing those as Christians, but everyone agrees with that. Yeah. We're naturally attracted to let's help the poor and let's feed the homeless. Because everyone agrees with it, there's no pushback in a serious way. Whereas, isn't this the ultimate social justice issue where we have innocent human beings being destroyed and the government not only going along with it, but using our tax dollars to really, you know, shore it up? This is a huge social justice issue, but, you know, it's hard, you know, to make the case that Kedron just made. It's so much easier to let's help the poor, let's teach people how to read, because those are very safe and comfortable for us. And this is really getting to a more controversial area. But I think we're going to have to just rely on God and get a lot tougher and really stand for all innocent human life, whatever stage of development, whatever the color, and social justice across the board, and not just where it's safe and comfortable.
Gentleman in the red shirt.
I would like you to expand upon the thinking of abortion in the case of rape. When is in the medical situation, you're saving one life versus another. In this case, the life may be the emotional well-being. It's also the creativity of life outside of the bounds of the love and marriage that is so prominent in Christ's teaching. Mm-hmm. Would you address
sure.
that issue?
Yeah. The instance of rape. I don't think we really prosecute people who have raped another individual hard enough. I really don't. And so many women who have been raped go through so much. I mean, you don't even have to be pregnant. But let me ask you this. I have a 4-year-old son. If he reminded me of someone, a traumatic situation, or let's say if he reminded my wife of a traumatic situation, would my wife be justified in killing him? What do you think?
No.
Okay, why not?
Because she has chosen to treat that child in a loving, caring way, and with faith and friends is not going to suffer some of the psychological consequences. In that situation, the answer would be naturally no.
Okay.
But that's that situation. That's not the situation that most rape victims face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I you can't be exclusionary or situational.
Yeah. So just in the case of rape, it goes back to the question, and I use that kind of as an illustration, but it goes back to the question, what is the unborn? And if the embryology teaches us that it's you know, distinct living and whole human being and their intrinsically value, even in the case of rape, it would be morally reprehensible to end the life because, again, there's now two victims, right? There's the unborn. It would be sort of like, you know, would I be justified to kill another person if somebody violated me? And it wouldn't be. In the case of rape, it's a very hard situation, but because a female may experience psychological trauma, doesn't necessarily follow that we're justified in killing another human being. What's going to have to happen is, and this is where, this is more, so the morality is a bit straightforward, the psychology is a little bit different, that's more complicated and more like social policy and stuff like that gets complicated. And so there are some people who I know who had been raped and then, you know, had their child. And there's more psychological trauma behind that because for one sister I know, her daughter reminded her of the rapist because she knew who the rapist was. And so that's where therapy kind of comes in that situation. And then obviously the rapist needs to be prosecuted. In the situation with an ectopic pregnancy, the issue is more of, it's either the mother dies or the child dies, and there's not much we can do. But in the case of rape, and this actually gets into the issue of incest, the unborn are human and intrinsically valued. So then there becomes an issue of needing to support the mom. It may be, for some people, maybe giving the baby up for adoption. Those are options. But we have to figure out and work around how do we assist this mother, because ending the life of an innocent human being, is just as reprehensible as the actual rape, if that makes sense.
Last question.
Okay. And then just to let you guys know, I'll be around so I can answer more questions and actually have a more in-depth document on this, and we could talk more. You, sir.
Yeah.
Hi.
You just mentioned birth control.
Mm-hmm.
Are you saying, I mean, taking a birth control pill, you think is morally wrong?
Good question. So here's, let me give you, we may have to talk about this more in detail. So the question gets back into the moral status of the embryo. When it comes to birth control in general, there are barrier methods, right, like condoms, diaphragms, and things like that, and there's oral contraceptives. That's a whole different topic, but basically not all pills are on the table for Christians. So some pills, they have three mechanisms that they use. And I don't know if this is the case anymore, but when you may get like a birth control pill, the instructions or whatever you get will give you two of them. But medical dictionaries will actually add a third one that for some reason isn't publicly given. One of them is, you know, it kind of tricks the body into not ovulating. One is to kind of make the mucus much thicker so sperm doesn't get in. The other one is to prevent implantation. And so any birth control, because the unborn are human at the point of conception and then it implants, any birth control that does not allow the unborn to implant is morally reprehensible because it kills the unborn. The only problem that happens is that sometimes with some pills, it's pretty straightforward what the mechanisms are, so it's fine for Christians to have it. But there are some that are questionable. We're not sure. It can work one of three ways, and we just don't know. So in cases like that, it goes back to kind of the explosion building. If we don't know, give the benefit of the doubt, and then don't do it. So
follow up is the IUD.
Exactly. So
say, well, that's fine. That's not committed. Yeah, so that comes back to where do you think life begins?
Yeah. And so, yeah, and so science is actually pretty clear when life begins at conception. But you're right, actually in the case of IUDs would be a good example of something Christians should not actually use, because that does destroy the life of an innocent human being. But I wouldn't say that the Christian is somehow necessarily guilty in the sense that they didn't know that. Most people don't. And so that's where you have to be educated and kind of figure out. If it's not, then you need to figure out some other method of birth control, if that makes sense. Thank you, guys.
All right, so you didn't come here to have, like, necessarily a lot of comfortable discussions here. You're bringing up some tough topics. Well, we don't really talk about it much anymore.
Well, then it's you.
You were ready.
Appropriate. All right, but I think that these guys talked about a very difficult issue, but if we're not mistaken, it's fairly clear cut.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to take another 10-minute break, and we're going to have a great presentation on same-sex attraction. So see you in about 10 or 15 minutes. Thank you.
I don't know how to tweet.
Good job.
Off.
You did awesome.
Good. I feel like I just messed up, and I noticed my words were too big on the screen, so I'm like, oh, no.
I don't know about that. Yeah. Seemed fine to me.